Ugh, I'm not in the mood. Do we have to do this?
Yes.
Wait, are we recording? Okay, let's go. You're listening to The Allie Colbert Show.
Welcome back to the Allie Colbert Show, you guys. Oh my God, thank you for letting me take 2 weeks off. You know, I've not missed a week airing this show for the last, I want to say, 2.5 years. So people who are like, can I get an episode? It's like, be grateful. Be grateful. And also, I'm grateful that I got to take 2 weeks. So I love you guys. Thanks for being patient with me. Thanks for supporting my mental health journey. I'm back. I'm back with a vengeance. And I have some really fucking cool news to share about the podcast, which I'm going to stash for next week. But here we are. We've made it. I think it's the end of summer, which is terrifying. I went to a wedding. I don't get at a wedding the dance between the father and the bride, his daughter. Like the father-daughter dance. It's like the dad gets one more chance to like try to fuck his daughter. Like he's not her husband. It's like the dad's like, all right, now that, and it's just kind of strange to him. And then like the mom dances with her son. It's like, you guys were never a couple. Let's stop pretending this was a thing. The daddy-daughter dance. All right, honey. You're not my girlfriend anymore. You never were my boyfriend, Dad. I don't understand what's happening. I finished in just like that. I love that show. I hate that show. I love that show. I love to hate that show, and I hate to love it. It's so undeniable. I'll tell you who I can't stand. I cannot stand Aiden. I'm in a place with him where I can see that he treats Carrie well. I can see that he treats her better than most men have treated Carrie. I find his jokes, like Aiden gives me the ick. That is the perfect way to put it. Like his jokes ick me out. His humor nauseates me. Him in his like big fucking diaper, tighty whities make me so fucking gay. He's like this like big old wooden roller coaster that Carrie is dating. I don't get it. And spoiler alerts ahead. So if you haven't finished in just like that, I'm giving you 3 seconds right now to click out because I'm about to spoil something. 1, 2, 3, it's getting spoiled. I don't understand Aiden saying he can't see Carrie for the next 5 years. I think that's fucking bullshit. I mean, Carrie... He had mushrooms in his system, Carrie. He had psilocybin in his system. He wants me. I'm home. Okay, well, you're allowed to have a life. You don't have to become sexless and relationshipless because you have children. That wasn't a deal you made. And you can have a girlfriend. And you don't have full custody because your children were fucking at Kathy, your ex-wife's house, who has a boyfriend. So she's somehow able to pull it off. And Carrie's offering to fly to you, to like your fucking plantation home, and you still say no? How dare you? Like, why? I would not be satisfied with that. Him being like, I'll see you again in 5 years, because 10 years went by like, he is so annoying. I don't buy it. That is a nonstop flight on Southwest. Shut the fuck up. There's no reason why Carrie cannot make that work and Aiden can't make that work. So I'm not enrolled in that. That's bullshit. He's annoying. I mean, I think Carrie should stay with a Manhattanite. I don't think she needs to go to the Carolinas to date her ex. She moved so fast and everyone was like acting like that was... Does anyone else have a problem with that? How fast Carrie's moving? She's like buying a new apartment. She's relocating. She's ready to be a stepmom. Slow down. Slow down. And somehow she's forgetting that Aiden never worked with her. Then the reason why I thought the Aiden storyline in the original series was so powerful was because it was about when you love someone and they love you, but for some fucking reason, it's just not right. And I think that's an important message, that like even when you love someone and even when they love you back, there are certain things that for whatever reason, it just doesn't work. I think about the episode where he was kissing her and he would make that sound. She was like, stop making the sound. That wasn't something that like she just for whatever reason was like not into him, despite the fact that there was mutual love. And I liked the integrity of that storyline. And, you know, I agree, big, you know, he's a bit of a douchebag. A big douchebag, arguably. But for her to go back to Aiden and forget that that ever was a thing, that that was like a valid choice she made, I have a problem with it. I'm not into it. Che is the worst queer comedian representation I've ever seen in my life. Working at the fucking vet clinic now that her pilot tanked. Brutal. Brutal. I'll tell you who I do love. I love Seema. I think Seema is better than all the other girls combined. She, to me, is like the true essence of Sex and the City. She walks like a duck. She quacks like a duck. This is the Sex and the City character. Seema is just independent and like fucking ambitious and interested in sex. And she's hot and she's single. And she is fabulous. She's nailing it. Like, Seema to me really fleshes out the group, the four of them. The other character who was pregnant, I'm forgetting her name. I'm looking it up right now. Lisa Todd Wexley. I mean, the new girls, they're it. They're fucking nailing it. I love them. Mario's a cunt. No one likes him. Charlotte needs to stop bringing him around. He's so aggressive. Like, please do some inner work. Anyway, folks, today on the show, we have Brittany Schmidt, comedian, amazing, hilarious, insightful. What a story. What a ride. Give it a listen. You're here. You're giving it a listen. LA on September 8th. I'm doing my hour at the Lyric. Get tickets to that. If you haven't come out and seen my hour, you want to see it again, I'm working it out. Come say hi, grab a picture, support. The tickets are on my website, alliecolbert.com. They're my bio on Instagram. And subscribe to the show, please. If you listen to the show and you haven't subscribed, do me a solid. Do me a solid, Miranda. Subscribe, please, Miranda. It's killing me. Brady and I want to subscribe. I didn't realize you were so sober for 5 years.
I haven't drank alcohol for 5 years. I when I first got sober, I was like not drinking alcohol, telling everyone I was sober, and then like popping Molly and snorting coke, like being insane. And my friend was like, "You're not sober," right. And I was like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "Who are you that you're like so afraid to be with yourself?" And I was like,
"Whoa, okay, leveling."
And I was like, "Oh yeah," I was like, "Fuck." So I got sober, and then it was a nightmare. It was really hard. And then I was fully sober for 3 years, and then I relapsed on weed and mushrooms and ayahuasca.
All at once.
Not all in the same day. But yeah, it was like my vegan relapse. It was like...
Right. Because that's
6 months.
I hear about the California sober.
Right, which is just not sober.
Yeah. So you don't subscribe that that's like a thing that people can like viably live by if you're an addict.
No, I think if... In my opinion, yeah. If you're an addict.
Smoke weed at my funeral. Good morning, Brittany Schmidt.
Good morning. If you're an addict.
Yeah.
I think you do everything addictively.
Yeah.
I'm the same way, even though like I don't have substances in my life, like love, sex,
yeah,
caffeine, sugar. Yeah. I don't just have a little.
Right.
I'm just like, nah, nah. I'm just like a bottomless pit.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're saying you're also like a sex addict?
Let's get right into it.
Is that what that means?
I would say, I don't know that I'm addicted to sex. I'm addicted to feeling validated.
Me too.
Right. So I think whatever form that comes in, obviously stand up is a big one. Yeah. I think relationships are a big one. I'm addicted to people showing me they care about me in
me
some
too.
Way. So I think that comes in the form of sex addiction, love addiction. I think also fantasy, like I'll meet somebody and I'll just like plan our lives together.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is going to be crazy. We're going to have kids. We're going to live in the mountains. And they're like, you're literally taking my coffee order. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right. And I'm like, you can put a whole thing on them.
Yeah.
So do you go to AA or do you go to like the,
I go to
there's
AA.
Like a, isn't there like
there's
a love?
SLA. I refuse.
What is that called?
SLA, Sex and Love Addicts SLA. Anonymous. Yeah. I refuse to go because the first thing they make you do is write down everyone you've slept with.
Why?
And I'm
that's
like,
nosy.
It's nosy, and it would take me the rest of my life. It would be my life's work. And then, like, still I would be writing. I have been, by the way. I've been trying to do this for months.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and be like, oh, yeah, that person. And I'll, like, write it down. And then I'm just,
so you're still compiling the list. You want to go to the meeting. You just can't.
I just can't get the homework done.
Okay. So I'm kind of interested in going to a slaw meeting.
Okay.
Because I do feel like I have, like, a validation issue.
Yeah, I think we all do. That's why we're comics.
I know. It's like, are you watching And Just Like That?
No. Ugh. What is it?
Where
is
Sex in the City?
Oh, no. I never got into Sex in the City.
Oh, okay.
I was too busy having sex in the city.
I couldn't watch. Selling my body on the street.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's one of these things where, like, I'm more interested in someone falling in love with me half the time than I am in, like, actually having sex. Like, I feel like I just want to catch someone.
Yeah.
Like, I love that chase thing, which is always a problem for me in relationships because I have, like, one eye.
Same. I'm, like, such a habitual chaser. Like, I have a joke that, like, ignoring me is my kink because, if you don't give me attention, I'm like, what is wrong with you? And then the second you give me attention, I'm like, what's wrong with you?
I know.
You know what I mean? So there's
But you were married.
I was.
So that's pretty amazing considering all of your kinks.
Issues, yeah. he met me at my level of insanity when, you know, I was like actively drinking. We were both actively drinking and we just were super in love with each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's also like, that carries you a really long way when you have like an explosive, amazing, insane like connection with somebody.
It's like a Tommy Lee.
Totally.
It was like hot and heavy.
Hot and heavy. But it wasn't, and we weren't on all those drugs. But yeah, and then once I got sober in our marriage, you know.
Right. Yeah. You see things a little differently. Yeah. And did he get sober?
He did. Took him about a year after me because it was like my life when I got sober, it just went like kind of straight up.
Yeah.
And then he was just at a plateau and I think he was feeling really frustrated. And I just told him, I was like, take 1 month off. 1 month off of drinking and just see what happens. And he took 1 month off and I think he lost like 25 pounds. Like, that's guys amazing. Are insane. They just like drop weight like that. He lost weight. He was feeling better than he ever felt. And then he was like, I'm going to go one more month. He still hasn't drank, even like after our divorce. Wow. Yeah. So he's been sober now for 4 years.
Wow. And so are you doing comedy throughout this? When do you find comedy?
Throughout what?
Like, throughout your marriage. When did you start doing comedy?
Oh, yeah. I started doing comedy. So, it's crazy because I started doing comedy in 2012.
Okay.
And then I was doing it, like, hobby comedy because I was working in advertising. So, I had, like, a full-time, like, big girl grown-up job. Mm-hmm. And then I was also such a drunk that, like, I just thought comedy was, like, a party.
Sure.
And I remember...
I think a lot of people think that.
Yeah. And I remember in the beginning, I was, like, very luckily getting booked on these shows with insane comics. It was, like, Jeselnik, Theo Von, Damon Wayans, like, all these people. And I have 4 weeks of experience. And
how
I'm
the
like,
fuck is that happening?
Because there was a show called Super Secret Comedy booked by Hunter Hill. And he would put more junior comics on to help bring the crowd. Mm-hmm. So like we were like the bringer comics. Mm-hmm. And then like the shows would have sold out without us, but I think that was his thinking in booking us. And it was like me, Jessica Keenan, Pat Quinn, like a few of those people like at that level that would get booked. And I thought I was like a fucking rock star, and I'm showing up to this stuff, doing my set, getting hammered in the green room, like around these guys, just like woo 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 woo. And I remember this woman who came with me, she was my neighbor at the time, she came with me and she was taking pictures, and I remember she said to me, she's like, you need to pull it together. She's like, you shouldn't be getting drunk at work. And I was like, this doesn't work, this is just fun. She's like, but if you want it to be work, you need to treat it like work. And I remember just being like, ew. And then I was like,
ew, go home.
Yeah, you're boring and old. But that like stuck with me. And then I remember also one time Neil Brennan told me, he's like, you drink too much.
Wow.
And I was like, Neil Brennan says whatever the fuck he wants to me. He did. He has no filter. He's like, you drink too much. Like when I put my last special out, he's like, you need to stop talking about sex. I was like, you need to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
I appreciate the feedback.
Thank you.
Thank you, Neil. But he's like, you drink too much. And I remember just like those two things kind of like sat with me. And then I got into a relationship. And then I had like this moment where I was like, I'm happy. I'm in this relationship. I'm good. I don't need to do comedy. I was like, oh. I don't need the validation of strangers. And then also my ex-husband was like a little like he just got out of a marriage that ended because she had an affair. And it was like he was a little tender. And like me being out late at night didn't really like gel well. So I quit comedy for 2 years.
Whoa.
So I did it like hobby comedy style for like a year and a half, mm-hmm. quit for 2 years. And then I came back. And in those 2 years, I got sober.
Okay.
And I got married. So coming back, going into comedy as like a single drunk comic.
Yeah.
And then coming back as a sober married comic.
Yeah.
Was very beneficial for me because I was like much more grounded.
Right.
And like able to pay attention. And I wasn't there to party. And I, you know, I wasn't there to fuck around.
Yeah.
And then I did it for like in 2019, I was like, I'm going to quit my day job. I was working in advertising, making a shitload of money. It was very hard to walk away from. I was like, I'm going to quit my day job. And I'm going to go do comedy full time. And that was in December of 2019.
Oh, and then, fuck. Yeah.
And then I remember Chris Redd took me on the road to London January of 2020. And we got back and the world shut down. And I was like, all right, well, I didn't go back to advertising. I wrote a book. And then once the pandemic was over, I shot a special, and then here we are. So like, it's such a complicated question because I think I've really only been doing comedy like full time for like 3 or 4 years.
Wow, that's a really interesting twist and turn to that.
Yeah.
What, and tell us about your book.
My book is called Stop Talking About Sex and Other Advice I Didn't Take.
Oh, was that inspired by Neil?
Yes.
And, oh my God. So let's hear the other advice. Do you think you talk about sex too much?
I don't think so. I think there are sex comics, like, you know, Amy did it when she was young. Nikki does it still. I talk about sex. It's part of my life. And especially now that I'm single again, like my whole new hour is very sex centric. It's like sex or suicide, your pick. You know what I mean? Like, you pick. Sex is like the warm up for my mom's dad. So,
but do you think they're just saying to you that you talk too much about sex because you're a hot female comic?
Maybe. I don't know what it was, but it was just the gist of the message was it's been done. It doesn't need to keep being done. You're smarter than this. You can come up with something smarter to say. And I was like, I can't. I've tried. I love that you think I'm smarter than this. I'm not.
I mean, it's working for you.
Yeah. And also I'm having fun, and also people relate to it. So it's like, if, you know, a white guy in his 40s doesn't like my comedy, then you're just not my demographic.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So people are constantly giving you advice about your stand-up or your life.
I mean, so not constantly. I think when I put that special out, I asked for feedback, and then I wasn't fully prepared for...
I know.
You know what I mean?
I hate that feeling.
Yeah, I was like, I wanted feedback, but I really just wanted you to be like, this is great.
Yeah.
Not this is where you could be better.
Right.
Because then I spun out for like a month.
Yeah. But the book is about...
So the book is about... that's just the title. I like the title. But the book is all like my sexcapades, like growing up, like all the crazy shit I did in college, the things I like got away with. A lot of it is like just white privilege. Just a lot of it is just like me like, oh, and I got away from another DUI.
Right.
But don't worry, I did finally go to jail for one of them.
You went to jail?
I went to jail for 30 days.
Mm-hmm. For 30 days?
Yeah.
Can we hear that story?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was...
You're a Wisconsin girl.
I'm a Wisconsin girl. So that's a big part of the story is, like, you can get, like, 4 DUIs in Wisconsin before they call your landline and they're like, knock it off. You know what I mean? So
that's unbelievable.
It's insane. Like, so many DUIs.
And you have siblings?
I have an older sister.
Okay.
She never partied like me, though.
She didn't party.
She's a scientist.
She's a scientist?
Yeah.
Okay, you guys took different paths.
We're the same person.
And did you grow up with, like, a church family, or there's no...
We grew up in the church. We grew up Catholic, okay. But my parents started divorcing when I was 5, and then, like, they were not keen on that. The church wasn't. So we got, like, pretty bullied, and then, like, early on, I was like, I think this church thing is for the birds.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because, yeah. Like, I was in Catholic school, and, like, when my parents started getting divorced, the bullying got so bad that I had to literally get transferred out of the school. Because, like, at recess, the kids would, like, come and, like, grab me, like, swoop me up, like, 6 of them, and they'd, like, put me over their head and throw me on the ground and like kick me and like spit on me and say I was like this, yeah, spawn of Satan.
Like and WWE style.
Yeah, yeah. It fucking was like, boom. Yeah, just like boom. Just like
curb stomp you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. And they're bullying you because your parents are divorcing?
Yes.
Like
yes.
What? You're going to go to hell? What is
yeah, that was yeah, that was the deal, which I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm in hell. Pretty sure hell's right here.
This is hell.
Yeah, this playground is hell.
Okay,
yeah.
So, okay, you're getting bullied. You're in Wisconsin. And then when do you start? I mean, it sounds like you were you always like acting out as a kid? I mean, you were getting bullied. Then did you start to break some fucking rules?
Yeah, like the second I could, my mom was so strict that it was like I couldn't even break rules. You know what I mean? I was just like stuck in the house, which is why I think when I did finally get like a driver's license and like a little bit of freedom, yeah. I was a maniac. I was like, I drank a ton. I slept around a lot. Like I just was like nuts. But yeah, back to the DUI. So I got the DUI in Arizona. I had literally just moved to LA for an internship at an ad agency in Venice Beach, and I was broke, and I couldn't afford to go back to Wisconsin for Christmas. So I was like, my friend was in Arizona. I was like, I'm going to go to Arizona. Her brother was playing in a bowl game, and the flight was like super cheap. So I was like, I'm going to go do that. And I got there, and I got so drunk at the airport that I missed my flight, which should have been the good Lord redirecting my plans to stay home.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I doubled down and then spent more money to get on this next flight to Arizona.
Yeah.
In the bag. I'm like hammered by the time I get there. I have to like pull it together because we have to go out. We go out and we drank like fishbowl margaritas.
Oh my God.
And then when
I would not be able to walk.
No. I mean like I was a rock solid drunk. Like it was like, it was not good.
Right.
So I take literally 4 shots of Jameson before we leave the bar. Just boom, boom, boom.
Oh, my God.
Disgusting. It makes me like, oh. But I take 4 shots of Jameson before we leave the bar. My friend is driving. She's from Arizona. She trips and throws her keys. And her other friend grabs them. And she's like, Paige, you can't drive because the DUI laws here are insane. And I was like, fuck that. I'll drive. And I grab the keys. Get in the car. Pull out. Didn't even make it down the block before I got arrest, pulled over. The cop saw everything. The cop saw the girl fall. The cop saw me be like, woo! Like, everything.
Wow.
I failed my field sobriety test miserably because I was, like, in these crazy heels and that's also wasted. Line thing. Yeah. Also wasted. Then they took me back to the drunk tank, and I think if they would have waited, like, 30 more minutes to take my blood, I don't think I'd be sitting here today because my life would be a lot different. My blood was a 0.18.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an extreme DUI in Arizona. So basically, Arizona is a zero tolerance state. So if you have a half a beer and drive and they catch you, it's 10 days in jail.
Wow.
Yeah. And then extreme DUI is 30. And then if you're 0.2 or above, it's 6 months.
Oh my God.
If they would have just let me fucking incubate for like 20 more minutes, I would have been in the 6 months. And I would have had to go back to Wisconsin. Like, I just wouldn't have been able to figure it out. So, I went to jail. I was supposed to go to Tent City, which at the time was run by, what was his name? Shapiro, I think his name was. He was running Tent City like a work camp. Like, women were in pink jumpsuits on chains.
Wait. So, when you go there and they take your blood alcohol level and you know, okay, fuck. Do you then, they keep you overnight?
No, they released me because it was a sting. So they were getting a bunch of people. So my friend had to come find a sober driver to pick me up. And then I was released. And then I didn't think, literally in my mugshot, I'm like, because I'm thinking it's Wisconsin. Like, we get 4 of these. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
right. So do you then call your parents? When you wake, where do you go to sleep?
Oh, God,
that night?
No.
Where
are you? No, I go to sleep at my friend Paige's house.
Okay. And you wake up and you go, what the fuck?
And I wake up and I didn't even go what the fuck yet. I still kind of thought it was fine.
Okay.
And then we're at the tailgate for the game the next day. And they're like, we heard you got a DUI. And I'm like, yeah, it'll be fine though. And they're like, no, it's not the same here. Like, it's going to be fucked up. And I was like, nah, it'll be fine. And then
I have like a pit in my stomach.
Yeah. And then, so I have to lawyer up because I need to not lose my job in LA.
Right.
And the police misfiled my DUI. They couldn't find any of the paperwork. So my lawyer's like, they have 30 days to find it and refile, but if they don't, you might get off the hook.
That would be amazing.
obviously didn't happen.
Right.
Day 28, I get the new sentencing.
Day 28.
Day 28.
You keep being off, like.
I know.
This little amount is like you're. It's razor thin.
I know. Yeah, and then
so you're back in LA right now.
I'm back in LA, and then I have to fly back to Arizona, and I'm thinking I have no priors. I'm white.
Right.
It's gonna be fine.
Right.
And I go to court, and well, my transcripts didn't help anything. I was a real maniac when they were interviewing me.
Oh God.
So like, they're like, the judge is like reading it back to me, and I'm just, they're like, did you take any pills? And I'm like, yeah, I took a mystery handful of pills. And it's like, I didn't take any pills. Right. I was just trying to be an asshole.
Yeah.
And then she's like, all right, you're going to jail for 30 days. You have to get the breathalyzer in your car for, it was a long time, like 6 months or something like that.
And oh, like they randomly.
Yeah. The fines were like $15,000. And I was like, I didn't have $15,000. So I had to sell my car. And then when I sold my car, I was like, loophole. I don't have to get a breathalyzer in there anymore.
Right.
So smart. And then during the pandemic, I was trying to renew my license. So this is years later, 9 years later. I'm trying to renew my license. And they're like, Arizona has a hold on your license. And I was like, what? I call them. They're like, you never did the breathalyzer. So during the pandemic,
I'm doing the breathalyzer.
I'm 2 years sober. And I have to get a fucking breathalyzer put in my car. And because of the pandemic, we're all sanitizing our hands.
Right.
So every time you do that and you try and start it, it triggers it saying you're drinking.
Oh, my God.
Girl,
I was
so close to relapsing. I would, like, my car would just shut down because of, like, the hand sanitizer.
Oh, my God. What a time.
It was a lot.
So, okay, so you go back, your sentence, 30 days, and then you show up to this jail.
Yeah, so I did the Beverly Hills pay to stay, which is it's in, literally in Beverly Hills. You pay to stay there. It's like a bougie jail.
You have to pay to stay there? I don't understand. I don't know how jails
like,
work.
Basically, I could have gone to county, like Lindsay Lohan.
Right.
And prayed to be discharged.
Is that where Paris Hilton went?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you get discharged immediately when you're, you know what I mean? But I'm like,
I. Do you have to pay something and then you get discharged?
No. You don't pay anything to go to county, but you just have to pray you get discharged. If I didn't get discharged and I was just in county jail for 30 days.
Is that arbitrary, you getting discharged, or is it good behavior?
No, it's mostly, like, they're overcrowded, so they'll take the people with, like, the least offensive offenses and just kick them
out. So that probably would have been you.
Hopefully, but then, like, I'm, like, in the off chance that they keep me, I can't be in jail for 30 days, I'll lose my job.
Right.
So I had to go to the Beverly Hills pay to stay, where basically you go in for the first 48, you can't leave, and then after that, you leave from 8 to 8 Monday through Saturday to go to work, and then the weekends you're in jail.
And then you sleep there.
Yeah, you have to sleep there. You have to check in every night at 8 p.m.
And what is that? Is it like behind bars, or is it? And who are you rooming with?
Nobody, because you pay for like the room. So like the cell, it was like not that bad. There was like a there was like a table and a futon and a TV.
A TV. Did you just have like Netflix?
Like a tube TV. No, I don't even know if Netflix was around. I think Netflix was still DVDs at that time.
Okay, and is your toilet there?
Yeah, there's a toilet.
And can people see in when you take a shit?
No, there's, yeah, it's blocked off.
Okay, so, and at this point in your life, are you like, what the fuck? Are you, you're grateful, or you're like, what the fuck is my life?
No, I was like, what the fuck is happening? I was mad. I was fucking so mad. I'm like, if you would have just let me drive, like, he didn't even give me a chance to drive. He just saw the whole situation.
Right, you have no idea how well I would have driven.
Right, like, you don't know how good of a drunk driver I am.
Oh, and then
I was so mad. I was getting drunk and driving myself to jail, and then I was making them validate my parking, and I was in for a DUI, and I didn't have a driver's license.
Wait, what? You were getting drunk driving yourself to the pay to stay?
Yeah. I was defiant as fuck.
Wow, you're like a horse that cannot be broken.
Yeah.
So you're driving drunk there. And then what are your weekends like in the pay to stay? What are you doing on the weekends?
Honestly, my friend gave me Ambien, and I would take...
This is unbelievable.
I would take
this
Ambien.
Is an unbelievable story.
I would take Ambien and try and stay awake and just fucking hallucinate. Uh-huh. And then I would write. I thought I was like writing...
For your next hour?
Yeah, I thought I was writing jokes, but...
Okay.
It was just like incoherent ramblings of a drug addict, yeah.
And how's the food at jail?
You bring your own.
You bring your own food? What are you packing?
It's like you have to bring like frozen dinner. So I was like eating like Amy's lasagna.
Oh this is really wild.
Yeah.
Do you make friends in the paid estate?
There was nobody there but me.
What does that mean? You are not interfacing with anyone else, or there's no one there?
Nobody else was in the jail, period.
How? There's one. There's, you're the only inmate? You're the only. How many rooms are there?
Like six. There was one guy that came in one night because it was during the remember the bath salts craze when people were getting fucked on bath salts?
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Some guy was like picking his flesh off and like throwing it at cars, and he came in one night.
So, like, we hooked up.
Yes. So I got pregnant with his kid. Then, yeah.
Okay, and how much is it paying to stay?
I think it was like $125 a night.
Wow. So, but you, that sucks.
Yeah.
At that point in time, you don't even have that money.
Yeah, I have no money. Yeah. I had to hit up one of the NBA players that I was fucking to give me some money.
You're fucking an NBA player at that time.
Yeah.
And so people, are they coming, hitting on you, and you're going, well, I have to go sleep at jail? Like, are you telling them?
Yeah, like, I have a joke about this. So I got out on the 4th of July, and I told them I had to go to work, and I obviously didn't. And I was at a party, and I was talking to Usher. And Usher's like, where are you going after this? And I was like, jail. And he was like stunned. He's like, no.
He thinks you're fucking around.
Yeah. He's like, no. He's like, where are you actually going? I was like, no, jail. And then he got my number.
This is another, you're constantly interfacing with high profile men that want to fuck you. Is this just what it's like to be a blonde with thick lips? I don't understand. Is this what it's
are fake.
Is that what it's like walking around LA looking like you?
No. But
celebrity men want to fuck you all the time?
No. No, they don't.
It's not?
Because Usher never called me. I gave him my number.
Well, probably because you said I'm off to jail.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you up to? I'm going to jail.
The next day, he was when his kids got in that awful jet ski accident. Do you remember that?
Oh, I thought that was Gavin DeGraw. Maybe multiple jet ski accidents. Usher's kids got in a jet ski accident?
Yeah, I think, yeah, one of his kids might have died.
Oh, my God.
It was, like, really dark, and I was like, that's probably why he's not texting me.
Oh, yeah. He probably got distracted.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I think
he probably forgot about me, so Usher, holler.
Oh, my God.
I'm just kidding. You have herpes. Don't.
Oh, he does have herpes.
Yeah.
I just saw that Usher was on vacation in Croatia with Jeff Bezos, mm-hmm. and the wife, Jeff Bezos' girlfriend, Lauren Sanchez, and Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom.
Oh, nice.
And it was like a little, it was an interesting
crew. He's a fifth wheel.
Crew.
He's like the Jeep tire on the back.
I wonder what, like, all these celebrities hang with Jeff Bezos, but I'm like, does Jeff, like, I know Jeff Bezos is so loaded, but, like, is he a fun hang?
No, there's no way.
He can't be, right?
Yeah,
like,
no.
They just put up with him because he's loaded.
He's Jeff Bezos, yeah. Because he's like, come ride my yacht that
right.
I had to knock down a bridge to even get it out of here.
Right.
Did you see that?
No.
He built, like, this mega yacht in somewhere in Europe. I want to say, like, well, I don't know where it was. But they had to basically, they built it, and they realized it was so big he couldn't get it out without knocking down a historical bridge.
Oh, my God. He's like, just bomb the town.
Yeah. It's just like,
he's like, just bomb Jerusalem. It doesn't matter. I need to.
Like, literally, who cares? Yeah.
Wow.
But everyone, like, hates him for it.
Everyone hates him for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But, oh, my God, that amount of wealth is so, I'm, like, very, I want so much money.
So
I'm, like, ravenous
yeah,
for money.
Same.
You know? So I guess kudos Bezos on knocking down that bridge. But so you get out of the Beverly Hills pay to play jail.
Pay to play.
And you're not thinking, wow, I should really sober up.
No.
You're thinking,
I'm thinking, fuck these hoes. Fuck these hoes. I'll show you.
And you're just going strong.
Oh yeah.
So
never faltered, not even a day in jail. I mean, I came back to jail with a tattoo. I got a tattoo when I was out in the wild, and I came back with
on your, like, off hours.
Yeah.
what is the tattoo?
I'm getting it removed now, but it's an anchor because I was like, I need to stay grounded.
Oh.
And I got drunk and got this tattoo.
My God.
And then I was late coming back to jail, and I thought for sure they were going to be like, you're drunk, you have a tattoo.
They don't care.
You're going to prison for the rest of your life. But they're like, you were 19 minutes late, so we were going to release you tomorrow. 19 minutes later. It was my last day.
Wow. Okay, so you get
out. I wonder if there's a statute of limitations on this, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure there is. They didn't care about what you did when you were there. They don't care about you now.
Right, no.
I don't think so. Well, knowing you, if there's like a day left in the statute of limitations, they'll be like, you had one other day and we heard that fucking podcast. So is there like a rock bottom moment? Did we talk about rock
bottom? No. Rock bottom is when you stop digging, you know? It's just like...
So wait, what is the when do you say I'm done with this?
So my mom killed herself. And sorry. That, no, it's fine. That, like,
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. That was, I drank at my mom my whole life because she was always like, you're an alcoholic. And I was like, I'll show you an alcoholic, bitch. Because we didn't get along. And,
holy fuck.
So, yeah, we
Brittany.
Were estranged for 6 years. And then 3 days before my wedding, I got the call that she killed herself. And I had the moment of, like, okay. The monkey's off my back. Like, I don't have to keep doing this. Like, I was tired. I didn't want to do it. Like, when I moved to LA, the drugs turned my addiction into something so different. Like, the Molly and the Coke. Like, I feel like it's, like, doing those, like, hard... Have you done hard drugs?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, for me, my experience with hard drugs was, like, alcohol was always good and fun. And, like, yeah, I got myself in a little trouble every once in a while. But it was never, like, dark, dark. I feel like when I started doing hard drugs, it's like I had been living in a house my whole life and I didn't know there was a basement. And then I, like, found out there was a basement.
Holy fuck.
You know what I mean? Where I was like, once you know that darkness is there and you go down into it, it's hard to not revisit. It's hard to get out. It's just always there. It's never not there. And I just had, like, this sort of darkness where, like, you know, I never identified as somebody who had anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, none of that. And then when I started doing coke, it, like, those dark thoughts started coming, and it just, like, I just felt it, like, eating at me, but I was so mad and, like, so indignant in trying to prove to my mom, like, I can have this big life filled with drugs and alcohol and all the things that you couldn't do. And
she was sober.
She was sober, but she also just, like, hated that I drank because she was like, you have so much potential and you're gonna squander it. She's like, you're gonna die. And I think now that I'm, like, you know, she's been gone for a while and I've done, like, a lot of healing around that, I see what she was saying. Like, it has to be so hard to watch your kid killing themselves and calling it fun. You know what I mean?
Because
God, I'm fucking raging. And she's like, you're dying.
Right.
You know, and so I felt it, like, for a long time just eating at me. And it was like, even with comedy, like, I wouldn't go do shows if they were on the other side of town because I'm like, I'm gonna have to drink and drive and I can't do that. So I'll just stay home. So I was just, like, completely sidetracking my career.
Right. It's like in the driver's seat of your life.
Yeah. Like, my career was drinking.
Yeah.
And it became, like, to a point where, like, I wouldn't even want to leave my house, but I wouldn't want to drink alone, so I would always throw parties, and people would always come over, and then I'd get shit-faced, and I would just go to bed, and the party would keep going, and it was, like, that was, like, the end of my drinking career was me just, like, blacking out and going to sleep. And then I got, like, you know, with coke, I got, like, a lot meaner, too. Like, alcohol never really made me mean. Like, I was, like, sassy, and I would tell you about yourself. But coke, I would
tell you about yourself.
Yeah, but I'm, like, coke, I would really fucking be mean.
Wow.
And, like, I started losing friends, and I just didn't like that. I'm, like, I don't like this feeling, but I couldn't stop because I was so fucking hellbent on proving my mom wrong. And then when she died, I was, like, oh, thank God. I was like, finally, we can stop this fucking charade. So, yeah, we went and got married in Nicaragua. It was the best weekend of my life. Like, all of my best friends came. We rallied. It was also, like, just, like, a very strange, tender time because my mom just committed suicide. Mm-hmm. It's a very small wedding. It's my ex-husband, his parents, my dad, his ex-wife. They were married at the time, obviously. My sister and her husband, and then just all of our closest friends. So we're all just like, we're gonna fucking have fun. You know what I mean? She's not gonna take this from me. Because, like, the thing is, like, my mom and I had a very tumultuous relationship, and she would always try and take things from me. Like, on my 18th birthday, she kicked me out of the house and stole my college fund. Like, on, like, she just, like, did crazy shit all the time. She's borderline personality disorder. Like, this is just, like, her thing. So I was like, she's not going to take this from us. And we had a blast. Like, popped Molly, found, like, Nicaraguan coke, like, just fucking drank, partied, had the best time. And then when I got back for her funeral, I was like, this is it. That was the last time I got drunk. I got drunk at her funeral. And then, the next day, I think I had, like, a fucking mimosa the next morning because I was, like, so hungover, and then I never drank again.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Were you tempted? I mean, obviously, you're tempted to drink, but that was, like, you kind of, it was, like, cold turkey, right? You're just,
yeah,
like, I'm
done.
Not drinking again.
Yeah. It was, like, I just told everyone I was taking a break because drinking was my personality. Yeah. Like, my literal Instagram handle at the time was Brittany Rose because, like, my middle name's Rose. And I'm like, this is funny. And I'm like, I like literally all my gifts from my in-laws that Christmas were like all drinking related. I'm like, this is my entire personality. Like,
wow.
I have to like rebrand. So I literally just told people I was taking a break. I knew I was done.
Yeah.
But I had to like ease people into it because they knew me as a party animal. You know what I mean? So I'm like.
Were people saying to you when you said they were like, thank God? Or no one was.
I think a lot of people behind closed doors were like, thank God. And when I did my amends in AA, people were just like, we're just so happy that you're healthy again. Yeah. You know, because it was so clear that I was so unhealthy. And I was like, you know, it's also a real delusion to be that unhealthy and that sick and think you're the most fun person and everyone wants to be around you.
Right.
And like right. Now as a sober person, when I see people like drunk and acting the way I used to act when I drank, I'm like so empathetic and I feel so bad for them because I'm like, oh, you're in so much pain.
Oh my God. I mean, I don't really drink. I don't consider myself an addict, but I never liked how I was when I drank.
Yeah.
So I just dropped it. Yeah. And when I think about how I behave, when I was drunk,
yeah,
I'm like, you were like, why are you trying to give the taxi driver a hand job? Like, yeah. I don't like,
yeah,
what is going on inside?
It's insane.
Like, it's just not well.
It's not well. And it's also not who you are.
Oh,
like,
totally.
It's like this person or like I think Nikki Glaser has it. No, maybe it's Eliza has like the party gremlin where it's like this little like demon comes out and it's, yeah, like, who is that? That's not me.
Right. And you're like, it was my personality. But it's like, it's not your personality.
Yeah, it's not.
It's like some acting out of trauma.
Yeah.
Or I agree, because it's like, I never knew you during this period.
Right.
But the idea that that would be your entire, I mean, I do not see you as that at fucking all.
Right.
You know, like, right, that's just not how you are.
Yeah.
And it's just mind blowing. And what was like one of the biggest parts of like the healing journey? Was there like a book you read or a therapist or some group you like? Was it just AA that was like healing for you?
AA was really good. Honestly, when I did ayahuasca,
yeah,
that was major. Like, that was, ayahuasca is like 10 years of therapy in one night. People in AA, some people say it's like breaking your sobriety. I don't think so, because it's like you're not doing it to get fucked up.
Right.
Like, you're doing it to be less fucked up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To like deal with stuff. And it is so powerful.
Where did you do it? I'm dying to do it.
You're doing it?
I want to do it. I've like, people are like, oh, that's when my Mama Aya's calling.
Mama Aya's calling, yeah.
Like, I've had this, I've weaned off of my SSRIs in order to do it. So I'm going to do it soon.
Okay.
But I'm trying to place exactly where and when I'll do it. There's like a place called Rhythmia in Costa Rica, I think, that people,
okay,
say to go to. But where
I literally went, I'm not supposed to say where I went, but it's just outside of LA. There's shamans in LA that do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're fucking awesome. I might do a trip to Peru next year, mm-hmm, to do like the full, like,
journey.
You know, yeah, the full journey, because this is just like in a converted garage.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's super powerful, but like, I just think there may be a little more to glean from.
And was it one night?
So, no, I did. You do two nights.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, two nights, it's six servings, so three per night.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've done it twice.
And are you purging, like you're vomiting? Is
not
happening?
Really. If you follow the diet, you don't really purge that much.
The dieta.
Yeah. You don't really purge that much. I puked once the first time I did it, once the second time I did it. Some people really fucking have some demons to get out. Like, but that's not, my purge was a lot more crying.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have a lot of like stuff to... You know, it's like stuff that you don't even think of as trauma that your body stores and buries. And I'm just like, oh my God, I forgot that even happened to me.
Right, right.
And like, to me at that time, maybe it was insignificant, but like to my body, I'm storing like a major trauma. Like,
have you read The Body Keeps the Score?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like the last time I did it, my left hand like stopped working. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the fuck is this? I'm like, am I just like, it's still actually kind of slow, but... What happened was I completely blacked this out. When I was young, I was a really good gymnast, and I was able to go down the stairs on my hands, like The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister...
Just you as a child,
yeah,
doing that?
Yeah. And my sister was always super jealous, and one time when I was doing it, she threw a laundry basket at me.
Okay.
And I fell and I broke my hand in like four different places. Yeah. And I remember at the time it was just treated very matter of factly, like, we're going to the hospital, we're getting you a cast, you're fine.
Right.
And when I was doing the medicine, it was like, no, that your sister who you're supposed to trust and is supposed to protect you just like violated you in this major way.
Was she trying to be funny?
Broke your fucking hand. No, she was jealous. She was like fit of rage jealous.
Oh, she was resentful. Yes. She was pissed yes. that you were doing that fucking yes. exorcist shit with her. Yes. She couldn't do it.
Yes.
Fuck.
Yeah. And like her and I are good now, but it's like little stuff like that. Like you don't even realize your body stores it. And I'm just like, yeah, that was crazy. That was crazy that somebody in my own house attacked me.
Oh, yeah.
And broke my hand. And it was just treated like, keep it fucking moving, kid.
Right, right, right. So your parents have no acknowledgement of the fact that your sister's the one who harmed you.
She didn't get any in trouble. She's like, yeah.
They're probably like kids playing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This was really
violent and traumatic.
Yeah.
And so that came up for you during the...
Yeah, and so my hand, like when my hand stopped moving, I was like trying to talk to the medicine to figure it out. And it like that like whole flashback came and I was like, oh yeah, Jesus Christ. Whoa. Like, yeah. And it's just like, you know, that's nothing compared to some of the other stuff that's come up. That's something I'm willing to share on a podcast. But stuff like that, just like little stuff like that your body hangs on to.
I've heard that like ayahuasca can be particularly dark.
Very.
As opposed to like, you know, mushrooms or other stuff that I've done that like is a little more light and playful and like, look how pretty it is. And so I'm definitely not a little bit intimidated by the darkness. Like some of my friends who have done it have said that like during their experience they're like waiting for it to end because like they want the relief, they want the light to like puncture it. Did you have any of that where you're like, oh my god, this is so fucking dark, I need to get out of it?
Yeah. So the first time I went in to heal my mother wound, like I had a real hard time with her life, her death, all of it. And the medicine put me into her life in quantum time, and which means I experienced from her literally being 10 years old to the second she killed herself. Mm-hmm. I experienced her whole life, all of her feelings, like everything. So it's like I never had empathy for my mom because mm-hmm. I never understood what she went through. And then the medicine like dropped me into it. And without getting into like too many details, there was some very dark stuff that happened to her when she was young in her home. The fact that she even survived as long as she did is a miracle to me, because it was like the way that I experienced it was like when she... So when I was in her life, I was like, fucking get me out of here. This is not good.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then at the very end, I experienced the day of her suicide as her. So I'm like her experiencing this. I feel all this pain, like all of this just like confusion, sadness, whatever. And I do it. I like put the gun to my head and kill myself. And the second I did that, it was just like peace and like light. And then I came back and I dropped in and I was like, I just miss my mom. I'm like crying. I'm like, I just miss her. I just want to see her. And the medicine was like, if you ever want to see her, just look in the mirror. Like you are her. Like you're getting to live the life that she wanted so badly for herself, but she couldn't because her mind just like wouldn't let her have it.
This is insane. This is huge.
Yeah, but it was like revolutionary because I never had the capacity to empathize with her, because in my experience, I was only the kid who she was really fucking harsh with.
Of course.
Because she was like trying to protect me from getting hurt in the ways that she was hurt, right. You know, when she was young. So it was like I never had that perspective until I did the medicine. And then once I did it, I was like, okay, I love you.
Right.
And I can like release all of this resentment that I have because it had nothing to do with me.
Right.
Like the way she treated me had nothing to do with me.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's like.
And it was like so powerful, but it's like, yeah, you have to be ready because if there's any level of trauma in your lineage, it's coming. It's coming out. Oh
my God. Yeah. But also just going to that place. It's just.
But yeah, I mean, like that's.
Deeply confronting.
Yeah. And I was begging the medicine. I'm like, get me the fuck out of here. And it's like, she couldn't leave, though.
Yeah, right.
It's like, if you're going to experience her life, she couldn't leave when this shit was painful.
Right.
And I was like, fuck. Yeah, and that was like night one, serving one. And I like, all of a sudden, like, the medicine's like, if you ever want to see her, look in the mirror. And then the shaman's like, serving two. And I'm like, what? What?
Are you on like a mattress during this?
Yeah. And how no, many not a mattress. You're like literally sitting in a back
job. Like, I'm at a payday Beverly Hills jail. Yeah. Are you, or other, how many people?
I'm in a dunk tank.
Shop in the back of a Volvo in Tucson.
Like, yeah.
How many people are with you?
Just in between two semis.
How many people are with you during this?
10 women and 10 men, and then there's spirit guides, which are people that have done the medicine, sat with the medicine like hundreds of times in case things go fucking crazy, which I have not seen it happen in the two times I've done it, and then two shamans.
And of course you are a comedian.
Yeah.
That is just so consistently. It's like every good comedian has endured so much fucking pain.
Yeah. You have to. I mean, even like with this divorce that I just went through, which has been fucking kicking my ass, I'm like, better be worth it for the fucking plot, baby.
I know.
Like, the art better be good on the other side.
You've built in like an arsenal of tools now for yourself now that you're going through this divorce. I mean, you've been through fucking hell and back.
Yeah, but I think the divorce was like uniquely much different because it's my first like breakup, really. Like, I was just kind of a hoe forever and didn't really have
from hoe to housewife. Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah, back to hoe.
And back to hoe is part two.
Back to hoe. I didn't really ever have a substantial breakup, so I think the thing that I learned in this divorce or this separation was that I didn't give myself time. Like, as comics, we put so much pressure on ourselves to, like, be on stage and be working and do this and do that. And I was like, no, I just have to, like, go to work, show up, make this funny. And it's like, I remember there was a set I did at the West Side, like, right a few days after we filed for divorce. And I was shattered. And I tried to get up there and make jokes about it. And the crowds can tell if you're okay or not.
Yes, yeah.
And I was so not okay. And then other comics were watching in the back. And I remember when I got off stage, they were just like, we're so sorry. And I was like, oh, that's not what you want to hear.
Oh, right. It's like they can't buy into it unless they feel you're safe with it.
Right.
And you're grounded in
it. And I wasn't safe yet.
Yeah.
And so I think I took like 3 months off from January to March before my tour started, and I did a few shows here and there, but I just was like, I can't keep pushing myself. Like, you can't push yourself to get through pain. You can't give pain a deadline. You can't be like, I'm gonna, because I did, you know, I kept doing this thing where I'm like, in September I went to Paris and I was like, I'm gonna go to Paris, I'm gonna buy my YSL bag, and then when I get my YSL bag, I'm gonna be better. And then I like got to Paris, got the bag, and I was like, I'm gonna throw myself off the Eiffel Tower. Like, I've never been more sad.
Right.
And a thing, an empty fucking bag, like, yeah, unless it can second as a parachute when I jump, like, it is worthless. Like,
right, it's not doing it, it's not feeling anything.
Right.
And there's a huge stigma in comedy about how long you spend, like, if you're not getting up, that's a real big problem.
Right.
Like,
but I don't buy into that.
No, I know. But it's like, I have felt that pressure before where it's like, I need a break, like a mental health reset.
Yeah.
And people are like, it's been a week since I've been up, I better get up there. It's like, give me a break.
I know. When people say that, they're like, oh, I haven't been on stage in a week, I'm going to be rusty. I'm like, fuck off.
You'll be fine.
You've been doing this for 10 years.
I know.
You're fine. It's like riding a bike. And like, also, like, when I'm on the road, I'm doing an hour and 15 minutes consistently.
Yeah.
Back to back, night after night. I don't need to come to LA and do 15 minute sets. I'm not being arrogant. I'm taking care of myself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. At what point did like your like social media pop off and you get like a following in the stand-up journey?
I got a little bump when I did the Comedy Central digital short, and then I got a much...
So good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I got a much bigger bump when I released my own special from Hoda Housewife, because I just clipped it all up and put it all up there, and I got very fortunate that those got a lot of views.
Yeah. Well, I think, and everyone should watch Brittany's special and your clips on Instagram, but when you can feel that, like, it's what I said about the pain thing, just, like, having gone through real things and have, like, transmutated them into comedy is, like, brilliant and endearing, and I feel that when I watch your comedy.
Thank you.
And, yeah, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
It's a fucking ride.
Yeah.
Tell people where to follow you or any dates.
Oh, yeah. I'm on Instagram at Brittany Schmidt. It's BrittanySchmidt. No D. I took all of those in college and last night. No, I'm just dead. I think that's it. It's Brittany Schmidt on Instagram and TikTok. And my website's just BrittanySchmidt.com if you wanted to catch me on tour.
Cool.
Thank you.